Hello, this is Detective David Love.
And Dr. Lana Love from Universal Soul Love Radio, the radio station that is dedicated to raising the conscious vibration of the planet.
Today, our special guest is Catherine Han.
Catherine is a clinical hypnotherapist who specializes in past life regression and life between lives therapy. Interestingly, Catherine started her career in the high-powered world of investment banking. Catherine had a life-changing experience. She did have cancer and then had a profound realization around that and a near-death experience. Ever since then, Catherine has been pursuing spirituality and understanding the meaning of life and the afterlife and the metaphysical.
I know our listeners can relate to that.
That's right. And Catherine and her partner, Mick Turner, are now conference co-organizers of the consciousness conferences in Australia that are include the Cosmic Consciousness Conference in Uluru and the Illuminate Aspects of Consciousness Conference in Coffs Harbour, and they are very highly rated and recognized conferences. So look, we're so pleased and excited to have you here today with us.
Absolutely. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk to you guys today.
And of course, we're very excited about the upcoming conference in Coffs Harbour, which we're going to be taking part in the 17th to 19th of January.
Oh, I know. Well, it'll be amazing. And we feel like there's a new energy this year. We've merged and rebranded two of our conferences that a lot of people have known, and you know, it's been quite a fixture on the spiritual calendar for the last 5 years. We had the Afterlife Explorers Conference and the Close Encounters Conference, and we just felt that it was time to sort of merge them together and go even a little bit deeper into different aspects of consciousness, and hence why we've rebranded. So it's really exciting for us to have this breath of fresh air coming into our event, and yeah, we've changed the format a little bit as well. So I'm sure we'll probably talk about more of that later. But it's very
maybe even now, Catherine, perhaps for our listeners, especially the listeners that are in Australia, or for any of our budding globe trotters overseas, could you give the website?
Yes, it's illuminateaustralia.com.
Fantastic. And it should be a wonderful few days, and we invite our listeners to attend. It should be amazing.
It will be. So you'll be part of, I think we've got 27 presenters and 30 presentations. We've got workshops and meditations and evening events. And, it will be really quite transformational and really, really healing. That's the aspect why we keep going year after year when it feels really hard sometimes and we think, what are we doing? When we get the feedback from people and discover the healing that they get at our events, that is what just touches our heart and keeps us going. It's quite profound for a lot of people to have really life-changing experiences at our events. So that's the great part of it that we love.
I think these conferences are really hard to organise, but I think they can be pivotal in a person's life. So you know, we thank you for organising that.
Yeah,
and of course, that David and I will be talking about the Super Consciousness Project and raising the conscious vibration of the planet, which is what we're all, I think, we're all trying to do it in our own way.
Well, we're all part of the collective consciousness.
Universal
consciousness, and the Illuminate Conference is a great example of that. And I think it's important for people to, you know, if you're struggling, to really get behind these types of events so that you can, you know, in those times, we're all experiencing tough times. So you want to really gather together and unite your energies and inspire each other. So this is a great opportunity, and we're really looking forward to it.
It's really important, David, that's one of the most important things, because often the path that we're going can feel quite isolated, and even though we can come together online through Facebook and other social media platforms, and a lot of us are meeting up with our soul families and our soul tribes and like-minded people, there is nothing better than actually being together physically and sitting there in that energy with other people on the same journey, or even with people that are just opening up and just becoming more awakened. And you cannot do that. You just can't get that same feeling online. So to get together once a year and be rubbing shoulders with people, and, you know, when you think about it, you're going to be sitting with people that are the most awakened people in the country, which is quite incredible to be able to get together with a whole group of like-minded people that you totally resonate with. Mm-hmm. And the connections and the conversations that people have right off the bat are just, you know, amazing. And people from our events still meet up and often get together once, you know, a month or still connect. And then they come back to the next conference the next year and we just all pick up from where we left off. And it's just so much fun.
And I think fun is probably one of the key words here. We all need that. I mean, with all the work that the light workers are doing, it's really needed. It's such a relief.
Light workers are allowed to have fun, right?
We need it. It's really good. It's more than fun. You know, it's hard to really articulate it. Mm. It's such a high. It's really so much more than fun. You just are buzzing, and that's something you can't replicate when you're sitting online chatting to people or listening to YouTubes and that sort of thing. So to get together with people is the best part of it.
Catherine, I was really interested to read that you started life off in investment banking and focusing a lot on business, and now you seem to be at the other end of, I guess, the spectrum of what we do in life, in the spiritual, focusing on spirituality. Tell us a little bit about that transition.
Well, I know it's just ironic, isn't it, really? I mean, I was very young, you know, in my 20s. It was in the mid-80s, in the peak of the, you know, sort of the Gordon Gekko type era, where there was just an abundance of money and you know, I was working for two of the, you know, of the sort of the dark forces now, you might say. I worked for Rothschild Australia, and then working for Goldman Sachs. And, you know, at the time I was just like, I'm totally oblivious who I was actually working for. And I was so loyal and I dedicated myself and worked, you know, so hard. And, but of course I was just, you know, oblivious back then. And now I look back and think, oh, it's a bit of a chuckle about it, really. But as you say, I have really come to the other end of the spectrum, and so for some reason I must have needed to have that preparation, and it must have been a training ground. And you know, at the time I was just in a very different stage of my life, so but I have a laugh about it now.
And you had a very close encounter with, I guess, illness and potential death. What was that like for you?
That's a common theme here with people who have spiritual awakenings, with guests on our show, and even with myself in a way.
Accidents or you know, illness.
Mm. Well, exactly, and I know very, very with a great deal of certainty that again, it was part of my initiation or a part of my, you know, cleansing. I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and despite my training as a hypnotherapist and my knowledge of the mind-body connection and the power of our minds to heal, I still got almost drawn down into that conventional medical system, which I now know is so severely lacking and so terribly, terribly flawed. But because I got, I went and had the test and discovered I had breast cancer, and all of a sudden I was, you know, being, you know, bullied almost into having a double mastectomy followed by chemotherapy and radiation and tamoxifen. And I started to believe that this was the only way that I was going to survive. And, you know, at the time my son was 9, and I had a lot of guilt put on me by the oncologist that if I didn't go down this path, you know, I'd probably be leaving my son behind. And so it was a terribly terrifying experience. And I was quite naive. Like, I, I knew that chemotherapy, of course, wasn't a great option, but I was very naive into I didn't understand how damaging conventional oncology is in the treatment of cancer. And so it was just with a huge leap of faith and trusting my intuition that the day before I was about to have a double mastectomy, I just couldn't do it. It was like every cell in my body was willing me not to go into that hospital. And so I just, you know, rang up. In fact, I got my sister to ring because I was too chicken to ring and cancel it. But I basically cancelled the operation, not really knowing. It was a giant leap of faith. And I just thought there's got to be a better way. And it just took me down the whole rabbit hole of natural healing. And I discovered how ineffective conventional oncology is. And I'm just so grateful that I trusted myself and didn't go down that path, because it's very damaging to actually have the tumor cut out, and it's incredibly damaging to have chemotherapy. Of course, I think everyone knows that now, but even people like, you know, other my holistic doctor and my, you know, fellow sort of light workers were still advising me, even a naturopath I know was still advising me to have the mastectomy and then go down natural healing. But I have since found out that to remove the tumor is actually one of the worst things that you can do, because your tumor is saving your life. It's collecting all the toxins, and cancer is not a tumor. It's not a localized problem. It's a systemic disease. And so things like this, I just didn't know at the time. And I have now found out that to treat it naturally is what your body's designed to do. And we've all got lumps and bumps and tumors and growths. And often, you know, people just are, you know, if you don't know about it, you can probably, they say something like 39% of women autopsied have lumps in their breasts. It's part of our body's self-healing, self-correcting mechanism to actually, you know, collect all the toxins in a place, and you just carry on with your life and don't even know. But now that we've got all this supposed sort of early prevention and detection campaigns, when you go looking for something, you'll find it. And you know, a lot of the natural healing doctors say that most of us will find cancer in our body. Probably everyone's got stage one cancer, and a lot of people would probably have stage two cancer. And so if you go looking for it, well, of course you'll find it.
You mean mutated cells and...
Yeah, and tumors and all sorts of things going on. And this is part of the problem, why it's just erupting. You know, 1 in 8 women now get diagnosed with breast cancer. Well, yeah, because they're sending everyone along to go and look for it. So you're going to find it. On top of that, of course, you've got the way that we live now with mammograms. Mammograms are a great, you know, cause of cancer. On top of the things like the toxins in our daily life, the pesticides in our food, the BPA in our bottles mimicking estrogen in the body that then can contribute to tumor growth in the breast. We've got chemtrails, we've got fluoride in the water. It just goes on and on. So we're already over-toxified. So, you know, why people would then suggest that you want to go and poison yourself with chemotherapy and totally pump yourself up to, you know, full volume toxicity just defies logic.
Well, I guess if you found something in your body and you try to violently remove that lump, that could metastasize, I think is the word. Lana might comment on that. But, you know, you can't just take it upon yourself to go in and, you know, disturb something like that, not expect those mutated cells to start freely flowing out of that site. I think you do have to be very careful. That's my sense of things.
It's a very delicate, difficult topic, and obviously, you know, it is important for them to have advice from the medical from the medical specialist. At the same time, I guess what you're saying is there are other ways of handling it. And for you, Catherine, it worked, which is wonderful. Tell us, what sort of healing did you have? How did you do it?
The very first thing that I did was I became vegan. So, of course, there's so Yay! Much.
Sorry, we're vegans as well. I think it's a wonderful lifestyle choice, Absolutely. Both for health and for the planet.
It is. Well, meat and animal products contain high levels of methionine, and that just helps to grow. So the very first thing, you know, if you want to go down that natural healing path, is to cut out dairy, which is very congestive to your lymphatic system. And of course, meat because of the methionine. So, that was the very first thing. Of course, I cut out sugar. I cut out all processed foods, and I became very, very clean. I did a lot of high fruit phases where I was just detoxing with a fruit only diet. I did vitamin C. I had vitamin C infusions. Look, I did all sorts of things. I did a lot of sound therapy. I was doing a lot of detoxing, like infrared saunas and, dry body scrubbing. And I think the most important thing, and people get very hung up on what are the physical things that you do, what supplements should I take, what should I eat, what should I, you know, physically do. And I have seen people doing this, the right things, but still pass away, and I believe that's because they haven't dealt with, they haven't worked emotionally and energetically. You know, so I did a tremendous amount of EFT because I'm an EFT practitioner. I did a lot of acupuncture, kinesiology, and so I was really working at a very emotional level and also energetically. And of course, I had a lot of interdimensional healing. I'm so lucky that I felt incredibly supported by the universe. I had healers just turn up and offer me healing. And
fantastic.
Yeah. So I did a lot of things, and for me, it was such a journey. One of the very first things that you said was that a lot of light workers are going through these critical life-threatening illnesses and conditions, and when I was in Egypt, I went into Sekhmet's chamber at Luxor Temple, and I heard as clear as anything, I heard the message that this is just a purification process for me.
Really? And wow. So can you say again, which chamber?
Sekhmet.
It was Sekhmet's chamber. Oh. Yeah. And so, you know, I realized that, for me it was to prepare my body for, you know, to make my body clean and detox and to help me cleanse myself of my own negative thoughts and my own traumas that are still stored in my body. So it really made sense to me when I heard that message. And so anytime the anxiety would creep in and I'd think, oh, you know, is it spreading? Am I going to die? Am I going to leave my son? Am I going to leave Mick? I would just remind myself, this is just a cleansing. It's just a purification process. And, you know, and I hear, you know, I do hear that a lot, that people, more and more people are becoming vegan, more and more people are really starting to look after their health and their body. And, you know, that was the way that it took that sort of wake-up call for me to get to that point where I really had to cleanse myself and really rid myself of, you know, for me it was about self-love. That was the biggest journey for me, was bringing myself to a point where I could say I love myself, and I had my what we all now laugh at and say, mummy's I am God moment, where I literally had this understanding on such a deep level that I am God. And I was sitting in the bath and I was screaming out in tears, oh my, I'm God. And you know, it was that kind of journey for me, that it was such a big awakening. Even though I'd been doing so much self-development and healing through the years, you know, but I did more in the last, you know, 18 or last, you know, in the 18 months that I was healing cancer than I'd done in the 20 years before that. So
that sounds amazing. Yeah. And the importance of our thoughts being positive, and even more than that, the importance of us understanding that we are part of God. How profound. It sounds like, if I may say, it was the experience of a lifetime.
Yeah, I wouldn't change it for a thing now. It was amazing. And as I've said to other people, that, you know, you don't, until you get something like cancer, often you don't have the opportunity to just spend 100% of your time healing yourself. And people give you the space, you know, when you've got cancer, to just, you know, you just sort of have this license to be able to spend, you know, particularly about the first 4 months after the diagnosis, I really did very little other than focus on healing. It was like a full-time job. It was 24/7, and everything that I was doing was focused on my healing. And when else do you do that? You don't. You fit it in around everything else. So all the little tiny nooks and crannies of your life, you know, that's when you often just spend the time to do your own healing. But
self-care. Time to focus on yourself and gain some, get to know yourself better. I just got an interesting thought, actually, a message that just came to me, that I the word cancer strikes fear in the heart of so many people, that it's like the atom bomb of disease, you know, and that power of that word in and of itself is enough to give us cancer and just strike us dead like a bolt of lightning. It's so frightening.
David.
We all apparently do have cancer cells in us all the time. So our immune system is very busy fighting that off. So it's a never-present sort of, aspect of the mutations of our cells and infections. We're always changing. We're always in a state of perhaps battling between health and disease. But it would be wonderful for us all to have opportunities to focus so much on our healing before we have any, you know, life-changing illness hit us. Your words about having a license to heal yourself, really.
Great message.
It would be so wonderful for us all to understand that the very fact that we are on this planet is to heal and to ascend. That is what we are meant to do, isn't it?
Especially at this time.
Totally. Yes, exactly. So I say to people, just treat yourself like you've got cancer.
Right.
And you know, that word, it's just a such a trigger. And I was very careful about my language. I didn't ever take ownership of it. I wouldn't say my cancer. I'd often just refer to it as the diagnosis, just to distance myself from it, just to remember that it's a diagnosis from a medical model that I now no longer even believe in. So a lot of the time I just referred to it as, you know, I'm dealing with this issue, or I'd say it's just I'm detoxing, or I'm cleansing. And that's what would keep me from going into fear. Look, that being said, I had times where I was suffering from terrible anxiety, that the fear would grip me, and that was probably for me another aspect of my healing, that I had to learn to not let my emotions bring me down. And so there was, on many different levels, there was a whole lot of healing that was occurring for me. And well, I think that everyone who
has decisions that you made there, including that wise decision not to actually own the word, that they say that the words we use have incredible power, that we're forever almost hypnotizing ourselves with the language that we use.
Absolutely. And that was, you know, as a hypnotherapist, as David would know, that, you know, those words, that self-talk and the way that we describe things is so important, and the way that we reframe everything.
Yes, the I am. You don't want to walk around saying, I am a cancer patient, because it's saying, I am a victim and this thing now conquered me, and I'm submissive to this demon. I don't even like to use the word demonic, but this dark spirit called cancer is ruling my life now and I must be subjugated to its will. And that's such a terrible mindset.
Oh, yeah. People, the language that they use, I'm fighting this and I'm battling this and even worse things. I've heard really terrible negative ways of describing their approach to healing cancer. And, you know, it's funny because, well, not funny, it was tragic, but at one point throughout my healing journey, there was a woman in Australia who died of breast cancer. And in fact, I now also don't ever say that people have died of cancer. I usually rephrase it and say they died of chemotherapy poisoning. But she was diagnosed with breast cancer and she died at some point in her journey. And it was in the middle of my healing journey. And she, for some reason, she got a lot of press about it, and she had there was a lot of coverage. And I saw a little snippet of video footage on the news at one point, and I noticed that she actually said, "Cancer, for whatever reason, I hate cancer, but cancer loves me." And I thought, how many times has she said that? Right. And to be saying cancer loves me, you know, it was just a really strange thing to hear, and it shocked me. And of course, you know, she lost her struggle. Mind you, she had gone through chemotherapy, and of course that would have been what contributed to her death, I have no doubt. But just interesting to hear the language that people use about cancer and how negative they feel about it, when in fact cancer is trying to save your life. It's doing an amazing thing for you. So
like a near-death experience. I've worked in hospice and volunteered in hospice, and I've talked about this a lot on the show. And also my father dying just before I came to Australia was life-changing for me, and it became one of my biggest spiritual lessons. Death, my greatest teacher, freed me, and it taught me to live and go on to learn other spiritual lessons. And I know death is the biggest fear, because we don't know for sure what happens to us after we leave our mortal bodies. So, because nobody's ever, well, anyhow, I'm going into different aspects of this, but that's all I really wanted to say about that, was that, it's just fear. And so you conquer your greatest fear. It is really life-changing, that's all.
It is. And look, I would say that I did not fear death, because like you, I take people through their death experiences on a regular basis under hypnosis. And I have seen people die in front of me over and over and over again. And it's never scary for them. I've been through it myself many, many times in my own past life sessions that I've undertaken. I've taken Mick through his death in past lives. And I've never seen someone that's being scared of dying. You know, dying is a much better experience for a soul than being born. Much, much better.
I've heard that. That was one of the Seth books. I think Seth said that.
Yeah, I
speak to people in their past life deaths.
Sorry, just say that again.
Did you say that in your past life regression therapies, you will sometimes guide people through their past life death?
Every time.
Tell us about that. That sounds fascinating. Mm.
It is. It's just amazing. I mean, I always take them through quite a few pit stops in that lifetime, and then I always get them to go through their final breath on the planet and in that body, and they go through it, and there's never any fear, even in the most traumatic of death experiences. No matter what's occurring for them, death is a far better experience and an easier transition to make for a soul than being born. Because on the other hand, when I'm taking people from the womb into a lifetime, they are often way more anxious and apprehensive about coming into this lifetime than when they actually transition out of their body at death. So I personally have no fear of dying at all, and I haven't done ever since I I actually read Michael Newton's book, Journey of Souls, and that was what really, really changed things a lot for me, because I had quite an amazing experience as I was reading that book, and I almost willed my soul out of my body to go home. But what I was fearing was leaving my son. I just didn't want to. And even though I knew on a bigger picture level that his soul, if I did have to leave, it would have been my time, and his soul would have pre-planned that, and we would have agreed to that in our soul contract. But me, the mum, would go into terrible fear, going, I am not ready to leave my son on this planet yet. He really needs his mum. And and that was my fear. That the fear of death didn't touch me. It was a fear of leaving him.
And maybe it was not meant to be. And it sounds like, because you felt so strongly, it sounds like that's not what happened. So
no, I'm still here to tell the tale.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
I remember.
We do have our free will too, and that was in my near-death experience. I really clearly got the understanding that our free will is everything. What we choose, we choose it, we define it, we create it in every single moment to moment. Every thought, every choice takes us on a different, a different path, and it's entirely our doing.
Can I throw a little curveball question at you on that? I had a conversation with our good friend Gary, who is the avatar of the Phoenix, one of the avatars, at least in this reality. And we had a conversation about free will just yesterday. And I'm just wondering what you think of this. I'm very much aware of the illusion of reality, probably the way you are. A lot of people, can't really think of a better term. The Matrix. The spiritual reality environment, the simulations in it. And I've often wondered about free will, and I know we have absolute free will, but it seems to me that we have absolute free will within the virtual reality environment. And so that kind of, it's almost sometimes feels to me, and to many other people I speak to, that it's that the free will we have is like a dog on a leash in a fenced-in yard, because the Matrix basically is creating all the simulations. So it's really it seems contradictory in some ways. How much free will do we really have? And it's just something that I've played around with and talked to people about. Just wondering what you think of that.
Yeah, look, it is, and again, referring to Michael Newton's work. There is one of the most common questions that people say: how much free will is there? Like a magic number that is there? 70% of what we do is free will. A lot of it pre-planned. I don't know that there's an answer, and I know that on a soul level. So in our human reality, of course, it can feel like we're very much. There's a lot of boundaries and a lot of mechanisms in place that we lose that free will. But the way that I saw it when I was in going through my near-death experience is that our soul, our consciousness as a soul, has more influence on our human selves than we know. And this is what I think we forget in the human form. We feel powerless because of so many external factors. One thing that came through very, very clearly, really abundantly clear to me, was that when you are in your heart space and you're totally in that heart space, making decisions from your heart and connected to another person on a heart level, then you have total free will. But the thing is, it's often very hard for us in the human to live our life that way. Free will is 100% our call when we are living in our heart space. And as we move higher and higher into, a greater vibration, higher levels of consciousness into the 5G, that will be easier to do. So that's where we're headed. at the moment, it's something that we've got to be really practiced in and keep consciously choosing to do, because, you know, we've got lifetimes of programming that are designed to stop us living from our heart space. You know, we're purposely being dumbed down, as we know. So it's very hard. We're so programmed to be out of our heart space and in our head space that's why we feel that there's not as much free will as we think there is. But our soul consciousness has so much influence if we let it.
That makes perfect sense to me. That's a good answer.
Yeah, and fascinating. Fascinating discussing free will. What just struck me is that perhaps a more accurate way of describing it is that we are all very much sovereign beings, even within the constriction of the and control of the matrix, and that when we are not in our heart space, and when we are, for example, stressed, we actually can create illness through stress. Now, paradoxically, when you think about it, that's still, in some ways, a very sovereign state of being. We create our own illness. Now, it's not that we will the illness upon us, but by fearing it, or by fearing life, we will create that. So in other words, we are sovereign beings. Now, when we can actually rise up, be more illuminated, be more insightful, and can gain control and mastery over our emotions and be in our heart space, that's when we can gain full free will. But if people will even just reflect upon the fact that whatever we do creates probably at least 90% of our reality, when you think about manifestation and you know, how, for example, worrying about bills and, you know, focusing on the negative actually brings more of that to you. While that's, you know, that's a frightening prospect, but in some ways it's actually quite a reassuring prospect, because we're actually doing it to ourselves. So when we realize that we are doing it to ourselves, our thoughts are so powerful, that's when we can actually step back and with insight and with care guide our experience into thinking thoughts that are useful.
I'm actually hearing, I love the quote from all of this conversation, that the feeling of stress is a sign that we're giving away our personal power to an outside source.
Okay, yes. I guess that's another variation of it. And certainly there are a lot of people in spiritual circles who will say that, you know, negative entities will feed upon our stress, but still we're the ones that are creating stress. You know, as they say, it's not in life, it's not what happens to you, it's how you react. But the very fact that we have free will over our reactions, when we realize how much damage we can do by thinking the thoughts we think, that can actually allow us to think, oh my God, we actually created that. Why don't we just try a different way and actually try creating good thoughts?
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, so many people feel that the external factors of their life create their internal feelings and reactions, but it's totally the other way around. It's their internal, you know, it's their internal feelings and thoughts that create their external reality. And you know, when you kind of get a, you know, a hold of that, it just can turn a lot of things on their head, and you just start to spiral upwards instead of spiraling downwards. But it's about being conscious, and so much of what we do is programmed from our childhood, you know, our very limiting beliefs that we picked up in our formative years. And we still are running. We're 50 and 60 years old, but the 8-year-old's actually, you know, still running the show. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. An author who comes to mind is Viktor Frankl, and the book he wrote about his experiences in concentration camps. How a few handful, those that survived, were not necessarily the most physically fit. They were the ones that were mentally fit. They were the ones that with hope, that were concentrating on meeting their loved ones after the concentration camp was over. You know, they had that hope. They had that vision. And, you know, the most horrendous of situations, they were able to survive. So I'm always fascinated about how much free will we have if we know how to, you know, how to exert it properly.
Well, like we were saying, you know, be in your heart space and keep focused on your outcome. It's so easy to be focused on the obstacles and the pain and that just keeps us stuck. But just shifting your focus back to your vision and staying in that. And, you know, Abraham Hicks says 17 seconds is enough to change the physiology in your body when you just stay focused and feel and use your emotions and your senses and your imagery, because that is the language of our subconscious mind. So when you can be, you know, putting your focus and your vision and your energy into your outcome, that is what you end up creating. So exactly those people that would have been kept focused on seeing their loved ones and feeling the hug or, you know, feeling the love or touching their loved one's, you know, face or hair or whatever, that would have been what then kept them going. But for a lot of people, their spirit would have been broken by that kind of trauma, and they would have just been very stuck in the trauma and the pain and the grief and the hurt. And, you know, in a way, they probably willed themselves out of their body in any case.
Yeah, and I do just add on to that. I've many times encountered lost souls. I mean, there's lost souls in life, but there's lost souls in the afterlife. And so we need to be careful about carrying on that kind of thinking and when we do pass on, because during my spiritual awakening, I actually encountered a mother and she was grieving, and it was like, you know, that she had left her children behind, and I'm saying, I'm sorry that you're dead and, you know, you're separated from your children. And she was just so distraught and then so much distraught. It was awful. And I'm actually finally about to publish a book about my personal experiences, and that's actually one that I forgot to put in, and that was maybe one of my more significant experiences in a way emotionally for me. Caution, I don't want to say caution, but just to give people a little food for thought about this, you know, about carrying on this kind of guilt and sadness and all these things and anger when you're about to pass on, because you may find yourself in a place that you don't want to be in the afterlife because of that.
Yeah, people can definitely want to linger around because of that, yeah, that inability to let go.
Right.
So we're really looking forward to being in the conference, and you have a great lineup of speakers who no doubt will be talking a lot about the importance of being in a heart space and, not stressing in today's life and focusing on not the materialistic but the spiritual. Can you tell us a little bit about the speakers that we have coming up?
Well, of course, in addition to your own beautiful selves, we have, and as you said, you'll be talking about manifesting and healing from the superconscious state, which is, you know, just... I'm so excited to hear your presentation because I think it will speak to a lot of people. Where to start? I mean, we've got some of our absolute conscious conference favorites like James Bartley. This is the third year that he's been back because he's an absolute crowd pleaser time after time. James is a researcher of all sorts of ET things. He talks a lot about the reptilians, but he does talk about it from a very positive point of view. And in fact, one of his talks is called What's Love Got to Do With It, where he talks about the importance, again, of being in that loving space where love will, you know, block out anything negative and to get into that space. So he's really fascinating. We've got people like Tracy Ash, who calls herself a 5D revolutionary trainer and an ascension pioneer. She's another crowd favorite. We've had her last year talking at the Cosmic Consciousness Conference at Uluru. She'll be back in Uluru, but also coming to COPS. Horace Drew, amazing crop circle researcher who was a scientist, and he has devoted his later years to studying crop circles and actually decoding them, and he's seen there's a connection between the whole Q thing that's going on and some of the messages that are coming through in the crop circles. So that will be really, really interesting. Wow. We've got a guy called David Dunger who you I don't know if you guys know, he's a podcaster in Australia that has been podcasting for about 8 years on his show Shining Side Out. He's actually going to talk about QAnon today and where it is, and give everyone a sort of a 101 on QAnon and what's happening with that. He's been speaking to a scientist who's about to public is the word, but about to come out and talk about the Australian involvement with the secret space program. So that will be fascinating. And he's also going to talk about timelines and the connection between deja vu and the Mandela effect. And we've got Max Egan, you know, just an amazing sort of David, Australia's David Icke, you know, a lot of people call him, which he'd probably find a bit offensive, I suppose, being referred to someone else. But, you know, he again is talking about the collective awakening and how we can all free ourselves from the matrix awaken. Amazing. We've got Michael Muir, who's a beautiful healer. I'm talking about your multidimensional self and healing through that. He does a lot of star language, and so yeah, there's amazing speakers. Philip Watt, Gordon White. I could go on.
I can't wait.
Wow, what a great lineup. How exciting.
Yeah.
Steve McDonald's another one, a consciousness evolutionist. And then, of course, we have our sky watchers. You know, we have incredible sky watching experiences. We attract so many craft. Last year we were seeing about 11 craft or more a night.
My goodness.
Amazing orb experiences. We had photos of Zeta beans in an orb that I captured in photo. Just amazing. You know, can imagine when you get all of us together, or these people all together, and we're doing these sky watches, and we do CE5. We've got Australia's Stephen Greer's rep in Australia doing a CE5 protocol, and we just have phenomenal sky watching experiences. So for a lot of people, they're just blown away at the level of contact that we have.
I like so many people that have a high conscious vibration together. I guess it must have a certain effect.
I'm getting even more excited about this conference now that I'm hearing you talk about all the great guests and the topics on this event. It's going to be great.
How wonderful. It's certainly a sign of the times that we have in that you're organising these wonderful conferences twice a year in Coffs Harbour, where close to where we live, and Uluru. And for our international listeners, Uluru is also known as Ezra. It's the most sacred site in Australia.
Like Sedona or
that's Mount right. Shasta, maybe. Beautiful, huge red rock that they say many say is a meteor from outer space. So certainly a sign of the times that we have these consciousness conferences organized. Look, it's been wonderful talking to you, Catherine. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you.
And, we look forward to doing the conference with you. And so we were talking to Catherine Hand, who's the one of the organizers of the Illuminate Aspect of Consciousness Conference. And you're speaking to Dr. Lana Love and David Love from
Universal Soul Lab.
So we love you all. Until next time, we hope you're all in your heart center, and we send our universal soul love out to you all.
Thank you very much, Catherine.
Bye for now.
Oh, thanks for having me.